Welcome to Torati Mecha Nachyomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Kosowski, and today we will be studying Megillat Esther, Perek Chet, Chapter 8. In yesterday's chapter, Perek Zion, Chapter 7, we learned of Esther's successful completion of her plan to turn Ahasuerus against Haman, and with many quote-unquote coincidences working in her favor, Haman was eliminated as a threat. Unfortunately, the execution of Haman does not guarantee the salvation of the Jews. Chapter 8 begins with what seems to be promising developments. The same day Haman is hanged, King Ahasuerus gives Esther, referred to in Pasuk Aleph, verse 1, as Esther the queen, control over Haman's house. Haman is referred to as Tzorer HaYehudim, the enemy of the Jews. Alshich suggests that this implies that although Haman is gone, the decree he engineered is still in force. Mordechai comes before the king as Esther has told the king about their relationship. The king removes his signet ring, which he took back from Haman, and gives it to Mordechai, and Esther puts Mordechai in charge of Haman's house. Esther clearly realizes that she has not yet fulfilled her mission to save the Jews, because the parak continues by describing her falling before the feet of the king and crying and begging him to rescind the evil plot of Haman, who is once again referred to as Haman Ha'agagi, reminding us of his connection to Amalek. The king extends his scepter to Esther, no longer referred to as queen in the text here, and she stands up and makes her case for formally rescinding Haman's decree. She implores Ahasuerus, asking in Pasuk Hey, verse 5, Ki echacha uchal veraiti bera'a asher yamsatami, ve'echacha uchal veraiti b'avdan moladati. For how can I bear seeing the evil befall my nation, and how can I bear seeing the destruction of those from whom I was born? Ahasuerus responds to Esther, here referred to as Esther the queen, and Mordechai HaYehudi, Mordechai the Jew, first indicating what he has already done for them, including giving Esther Haman's house and executing Haman who threatened the Jews. Ahasuerus then suggests that rather than rescinding the decree, Esther and Mordechai may write whatever new decrees they want regarding the Jews in the name of the king and seal it with the king's ring, because letters written in the king's name and sealed with the king's ring cannot be repealed. Rashi explains that Ahasuerus was concerned that rescinding his word would degrade his power. Ibn Ezra suggests that Ahasuerus was bound by Persian law, citing Daryavash's inability to save Daniel in chapter 6 of the book of Daniel as another example of the Persian king being bound by Persian law. In that story, the king's governors manipulate Daryavash into a situation in which he passes a law which he doesn't initially realize will lead to Daniel being thrown to the lions. These perspectives bring to mind the debate between Rav and Shmuel, which we discussed when learning Perek Aleph, chapter 1. Was Ahasuerus pikeach or tipesh, shrewd or foolish? In the context of Megillat Esther, Ahasuerus seems to have gotten himself into the position of being the sole power, but also easily manipulated and influenced. Has he shrewdly decided that it's not in his best interest to appear wishy-washy and would rather allow Mordechai to engineer a civil war in his empire than admit an error? Looking at the story in Sefer Daniel alongside the Megillah, we can detect the satire highlighting the foolishness of Persian kings and Persian laws from the perspective of Tanakh, which we noticed when we began studying Megillat Esther. The continuation of chapter 8 in Megillat Esther explains that the new decree allowed the Jews to defend themselves by killing and destroying their enemies. Interestingly, Ibn Ezra suggests that what Mordechai wrote is that the king had commanded Haman to send out a decree allowing the Jews to kill their enemies on the 13th of Adar, but Haman reversed the decree and wrote that the Jews were to be killed. When the king found out Haman's evil plan, he hanged Haman for his plot against the Jews, which was the opposite of the king's intention. In this way, Mordechai was able to save the Jews and keep the king's honor intact. Perek Chet, chapter 8, is filled with language which parallels Perek Gimel, chapter 3, with the opposite impact. In chapter 3, the king removes his ring and gives it to Haman. In chapter 8, the king removes his ring and gives it to Mordechai. In chapter 3, Ahasuerus tells Haman to keep the money he has offered him and to do whatever he wants to the nation in question. Katov Beinecha. In chapter 8, Ahasuerus tells Esther and Mordechai to write whatever they want about the Jews. Katov Beinechem. The elaborate description of calling Sofrei HaMelech, the king's scribes, citing the date they are called, writing everything commanded by Haman in Perek Gimel, chapter 3, and by Mordechai in Perek Chet, chapter 8, and to whom the letter is sent, how it is written, even the language of the letter itself uses almost identical language. This parallel language highlights the reversal. It uses identical language to describe the plot against the Jews as well as the plan to save the Jews, highlighting the reversal of fortune. This nearly identical language is part of a larger chiastic structure of Megillat Esther, as is pointed out by Professor Yonatan Grossman and Rabbi Dr. Shuki Reis of Machon Herzog. As you may know, a chiastic structure, also known as Atbash, is when the first thing parallels the last thing, second the second to last, etc. Hence the term Atbash, with Aleph being the first letter of the Hebrew alphabet and Tav being the last, Bet the second, and Shin the second to last. The book of Esther begins and ends with a description of Ahasuerus. Next, Ahasuerus's first three parties are described, which we will see parallel three parties of the Jews at the end of the book. The description of Haman's rise in stature in chapter 3 is paralleled by the description of Mordechai's stature in chapter 9. The chiastic structure continues with the similar language in chapter 3 and chapter 8, which we have been discussing. After that, the first party of Esther in chapter 5 mirrors her second party in chapter 7. After Esther's first party, Haman has a run-in with Mordechai and consults with members of his household, just as he does immediately before the second party. The middle of the chiasm is the climactic moment in chapter 6 when Ahasuerus cannot sleep, the turning point of the Megillah. This style of writing is an example of form equals content, a literary convention of matching the style in which something is written with the ideas expressed in the text. In this case, the theme which pervades the entire Megillah is that of reversal, which is shown not only in the twists and turns of the story, but also in writing the story as a complete mirror image of itself. Commenting on Tanakh's frequent use of chiastic structures, in his introduction to the Koran Sidur, Rabbi Jonathan Sachs writes, and I quote, "This is more than a stylistic device. It is the expression of one of the Torah's most profound beliefs, namely, the reciprocal nature of justice. Those who do good are blessed with good. Those who do evil suffer evil. What happens to us is a mirror image of what we do. Thus, form mirrors substance. Mirror image symmetry is the literary equivalent of a just world." End quote. We are not always able to see Hashem's justice, and yet we believe that ultimately justice prevails. In Megillat Esther, Hashem is completely hidden, not mentioned at all, and yet in so many ways, both in the substance and style of its story, we can find Hashem's justice as the story unfolds. Chapter 8 concludes on a triumphant note with two psukim verses which are recited out loud when Megillat Esther is read publicly. One describes Mordechai appearing in royal garb and the joy of the city of Shushan upon hearing the new decree, Vahair Shushan Sala V'Samecha, contrasted to the bewilderment of the city of Shushan back in chapter 3, verse 15, after hearing the initial decree, Vahair Shushan Navocha. The next pasuk in chapter 8, verse 16, is one we say every week after Shabbat in Havdalah. Layhudim haita ora v'simcha v'sason bikar. For the Jews, there was light, happiness, joy, and honor. As the word spreads throughout the provinces, Jews celebrate, and many non-Jews join the Jews out of fear. In Perek Chet, chapter 8, we saw Esther continue her mission to save the Jews, now officially bringing Mordechai on board in her conversations with Ahasuerus, and although she was not able to take back Haman's decree, she and Mordechai are able to supersede it with a decree instructing Jews to defend themselves. We learned about the overall structure of Megillat Esther, which is very apparent in this chapter with its similar language to Perek Gimel, chapter 3. The Jews' reversal of fortune is nearly complete, with the next step being the war to defend themselves, which we will learn about tomorrow in Perek Tet, chapter 9. Thank you for studying together in the memory of our beloved father and grandfather, Ted Ordon, Mordechai ben Ephraim v'Miriam Golda, in commemoration of his 10th Yahrzeit. His family is forever grateful for his devotion to family, vision, courage, and optimism. May the merit of our collective learning elevate his neshama and bring unity and peace to Klal Yisrael. Helen and Moshe Sassover and family.